Number 11 and 13, and then do 12 on the agenda. So 11 is the Wild Future Update and 2017 Legislative Proposals. This is a briefing and a decision. And number 13 is the Legislative Session Operating Budget Request, a briefing and a decision. So, Jennifer, Raquel, take, you guys want?
Yes.
I want to say a couple things.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How excited I guess we are to finally be at this point in time. It was over a year ago when we started this Wild Future initiative, and looking for ways to improve service, to improve the product we deliver, and so here we are. So just wanted to note that, you know, this is the first of a number of years we hope that you're going to hear about how we're out working with the public, listening, and developing ideas for improvement. We've got a tough session coming up. I think everybody knows this will be the large session, the budget session. We're facing probably additional, I know you've heard me say this just about every year, but additional challenges around general fund and access to general fund with the McCleary Supreme Court decision and the lack of a solution for our K through 8 school funding. We've heard from OFM that the expectation is that revenue probably isn't going to grow. In fact, we may even be looking at a static budget situation in terms of general fund revenue for the state. But given that, you know, we're out actively taking those ideas we heard last summer and fall, and I think you know those are all posted on our website, and we've shaped those into improvement ideas that these folks are going to talk about. We've got also documents that describe the efficiencies we've put in place or the additional service improvements we've put in place. And I think Jennifer's going to touch on those. We're not asking you today for approval of a budget. We're not asking for, you to say this is the right package, because we're not done building the package yet. What we are doing is we're going to ask for your green light to continue to develop that, to continue to work with stakeholders. We're about halfway through our second set of public meetings. We did, I think, two this week, and we've got three next week. So we're going to be working our way through those. We've got a number of either iterative or new meetings with groups to discuss this. We're meeting with people one-on-one. So this is something that's going to be evolving as we move through to the governor's budget in mid-December, and then the legislative session, which won't end until the middle of April. So asking for your approval to kind of keep pushing that ball forward, and then asking, too, what will you need and when will you need it in terms of information, in terms of communication, in terms of expressing comfort or discomfort with the package that we submit to. Well, we have to submit a package to the governor in September 16th. We won't see the governor's budget until December 14th, so we don't know what of the particulars that we submit will make it into the governor's budget. But how do you want to be involved with that? We're open to one-on-one discussions as frequently as you like. We're open to group discussions, a subcommittee maybe, or however you want to deal with that, just so you don't feel out of the loop and left unaware. So I just wanted to say that up front. I don't think we're ready for, and that we're not asking for approval of a specific package. That's on the operating budget. On the capital budget that Tim Burns is going to talk about, we are asking for approval, and we've done a lot of homework there that Tim will describe. So the last thing I'd say is the group of folks you see here today, Owen and Jennifer and Raquel and Bruce Botka in the back and Kim Marshall way in the back there, along with a lot of folks from the programs, have worked very hard to put this together, and some great leadership in terms of the effort that's gone forward. So wanted to acknowledge that and then just turn it over to Jennifer to start off.
Thanks, Deputy Director. Appreciate that.
Great. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Jennifer Kwan. I'm Special Assistant to the Director, and I'm joined here by my colleagues Owen Rowe, our Budget Director, and Raquel Crozier, our Legislative Liaison. So our agenda today, I would like to give a brief update on where we are with our Wild Future Initiative. Owen will cover the conditions of our department and state budget, and then Raquel and Owen and myself will work you through the proposed operating budget and legislative proposals. As you've already heard, I would ask and request that you consider all these proposals to be works in progress. You'll see all the documents have draft, proposed, working draft. Even the documents on our website are marked draft, and that's really to denote that these are works in progress, and at this point, we've just begun the conversation. As Joe mentioned, there has been a lot of work that has gone on to this into this process, a lot of staff work, not only here at headquarters, but even the regional meetings that are going on right now has required regional staff to get involved and understand more of this process than they ever have in the past. So this has really been an all-hands-on-deck effort. And we've really tried to up our game and do special touches where we needed to. Even with this effort, we've missed a couple touches. We were disappointed to hear from a couple upset stakeholders this morning regarding the AIS, aquatic invasive species, draft legislation. And we understand their frustration. We, again, are at the beginning of this conversation and are committed to work with that set of stakeholders to make sure they have the time and space to provide input on that effort. The proposals you are looking at today are, they represent a pretty ambitious legislative agenda, I would say probably, if not the biggest, close to one of the biggest we have in front of us, and we're not taking this effort lightly. I would also just like to express my appreciation for those of you that were able to sit down and chat with me for a little bit on this. You know, what you're going to see today is our attempt to roll up a very complicated set of spreadsheets and numbers and work that we've been doing into something that's digestible. But there is a lot of detail that goes behind this, and I expect you'll have more questions along the way. But I think that outreach really is also representing us trying to improve our business practices, make sure you guys have those details if you need them as we're moving forward to make these big decisions. So very briefly, Wild Future. I know that Raquel was here in June and gave a pretty detailed presentation on Wild Future, so I'm not going to reiterate all that, but just give enough information to get you back up to speed to where what this initiative is. So after our failed attempt at a fee increase last time around with the legislature, we regrouped. We got together and under Director Unsworth's new leadership, he was new at the time, decided to hit the road. It was time to get out, have the director meet the constituents across the state and hear from them what their priorities for Department of Fish and Wildlife were. And in the past year, we've heard from over 3,000 individuals on what we're doing well, what we're not doing well, and what they want to see us do in the future. I would also say that while there are distinct Wild Future legislative proposals and budget proposals right now, that's not all that Wild Future is. Really, it is a new way of doing business for us. And to date, at least how we're working internally, I've seen a lot of a significant effect on how we're better coordinated across programs, and we're moving to a place where we will be more forward-looking and hopefully a lot less reactive. We do plan to make this approach part of our ongoing operation, that is, you know, continual outreach with our stakeholders and check-ins with our stakeholders just to make sure that we're headed in the right direction. And finally, I would add that we are trying to ensure we're growing our workplace accordingly, too. So we've been doing similar outreach, or inreach, I should say, to staff just to make sure we're hearing and making our management decisions based on perspectives both inside and outside. So listed here are the key things we heard coming out of our listening sessions last year. Nothing is too surprising, and what's nice is that from internally we were hearing a lot of the same things. Really, the bottom line for most of us is that for Washingtonians, outdoor opportunities are important to quality of life. So taking what we heard from these first rounds of listening sessions, we developed a short-term strategy to address the current shortfall, and you'll hear a little bit more about that from Owen. This includes a solution that looks at both fee increases as well as a request for new general fund state dollars. And we're also, the short-term strategy is beginning to deliver some of the new hunting and fishing opportunities that we heard were desired from the public. Most of the proposals have been available to the public since June. We've been holding meetings with individuals, with groups, with our advisory groups, and as you know, we're currently conducting public workshops. All of that feedback will continue to help shape these proposals. And the public has given us a lot to do. This feedback, there was a lot for us to achieve in that feedback. A lot of it we're not going to be able to do in the next 2 years. So we are also in the process of developing longer-term strategies that address some of the other key values we heard. For example, elevation of the conservation and protection programs we have, as well as better engaging our non-consumptive recreationists who also value fish, wildlife, and habitat on Washington's landscape. But today, the rest of our conversation will be focused on this short-term piece, and we'll continue to work with you on our longer-term strategies as they evolve. And at this point, we're going to get into the nitty-gritty now and turn it over to Owen.
Thank you, Jennifer. Good afternoon, Chair Smith and Fish and Wildlife Commissioners. For the record, I'm Owen Rowe, the Department's Budget Director. WDFW budget challenges. I don't think this is the first time that I've sat before you and said that we have some challenges that we face. It's been a bit of a rocky road for the state and for the department over the past several biennia. Well over 2 years ago, we identified that the spending pressure or the appropriation authority that the legislature provides us on the state wildlife account in the portion that we deposit fishing and hunting license revenue was becoming unsustainable. And this was primarily caused by growing costs to manage fisheries and securing ESA permits. Fish food continues to escalate at a rather high rate due to the growth of aquaculture and the declining resource that fish meal is based on. I think we spend about $6 million a year on fish food alone. We've seen about a 5% inflationary increase each year over the past history. That's even further challenged by the fact that we've been dealing with drought over the past couple of years, and we have to buy medicated fish food now for the fish that are stressed in our hatcheries. Funding was also badly needed for our declining hatchery infrastructure to be able to keep up with our operation and maintenance and to support levels of enforcement officers necessary to maintain orderly fisheries and protect the resources that we all enjoy. So the department brought forth a fee bill for consideration in front of the 2015 legislature to bridge that gap. The proposed legislation proposed additional recreational and commercial fishing fees and requested state general fund to maintain the state's tribal obligations around our fisheries. As the session developed, it became clear that the collective bargaining agreements, which were negotiated prior to session and included the first cost of living adjustment for state employees in 8 years, as well as targeted staff salary increases for many job increases across the state and within WDFW, would further exacerbate the projected problem. Problem moved from a $6 million projected deficit 2 years ago to a $10 million projected deficit in the account. And that was just to maintain current service levels. It is important to note, I want to make clear that not all of these cost increases fall on the state wildlife account. We have a very complicated budget. We have probably 50 different sources of revenue that we track separately. And when we receive funding for the legislature, for things that affect the entire agency, they give it to us in a manner that hits all of our accounts in a proration to our appropriation authority in those accounts. We run about a quarter of our budget like a business. We sell through the sale of recreational license documents. When costs increase in that portion of our budget, we either need to reduce services or raise prices. The fee proposals that we brought forward in 2015 were not enacted by the legislature. and increased costs will soon make it impossible to maintain current service levels without new revenue. However, last session, recognizing the continuing budget challenges the department faces, the governor and legislature provided a support in the budget to maintain current opportunities this biennium. We received general fund support to support the state's commercial and treaty tribe obligations, commercial fishing, that is, and direction in the state operating budget to spend down our fund balance in the state wildlife account to maintain current service levels. This was a one-time option, since the fund balance can only be utilized once. Part of the Wild Future Initiative that we'll be talking about throughout this presentation is to stabilize the account where we deposit fishing and hunting license revenue and to build back a reasonable reserve based on best fund management principles. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening here. Primary cause of shortfall, and I don't think any of us will be surprised to hear this, is that our revenue is lagging our spending authority or demands upon the state wildlife account. As you can see, as a historical graph from 05-07 through 21-23 into the future, and to the best of our ability, we do not believe that revenue is going to come anywhere close to keeping up with spending pressures on the account. The red line there is the spending authority, and the green line is projected revenue. Another way to look at that is from a fund balance perspective. This slide depicts the portion of the state wildlife account where we deposit fishing and hunting license revenue. That portion of the account should have about $7 million in the reserve. We bumped up a little bit in 13-15 because of the incredible salmon fishing seasons we had. Our fishing revenue actually grew by 4%, and we don't see that those type of salmon fishing opportunities happening in the near future anyway. The increased pressures on the account that I told you about from increasing costs to manage fisheries as well as the increasing costs on the department are projected to spend the state wildlife account into the red, or at least the portion where we deposit general fishing and hunting licenses by the end of the 17-19 biennium. And that continues to compound in future biennium. It's just a graphical representation of the type of shortfalls that we're looking at in the future. Obviously, we can't deficit spend. We're not the federal government. But it was just another way to look at what a shortfall looks like and what an effect on our fund balance would be. Well, we are not the only agency that has budget challenges. Many other agencies do as well. The entire state is continuing to manage limited general fund state resources. The executive management team met with David Schumacher, who's the director of OFM, a couple of weeks ago. He was kind enough to stop by. He's been meeting with many agencies to try to explain to them what their outlook is. And they're looking at a $1.3 billion deficit just to maintain current service levels. Basically, that's caused by increasing costs across state government, similar to some of the costs that we're seeing in our agency as well. And that problem statement's worsened by an additional $3 to $4 billion, depending upon who you ask, by the McCleary decision, which the state Supreme Court is currently holding the legislature in contempt on its current levels and structure of spending on public education. So we've heard from many sources, from the governor's office as well as folks in the legislature, that that's going to be one of the biggest issues that they're going to tackle next session, and there'll be a whole lot of focus on that particular piece of the budget next year. This is a graphic that OFM was using to educate state agencies about what the current budget looks like. This is just the, keep in mind that top bar, the projected spending needs, is just the very tail end of the state general fund, just to detail out what the problem statement is. The green bars below that are revenue forecasts from pessimistic to optimistic, and we've been told to be guarded that the optimistic forecast is very likely not going to happen. That middle green bar has about a 50% chance of happening. The national economy is beginning to dip into recession, and Washington usually lags the national economy, so we have to be guarded and careful in managing the state general fund resources. That middle baseline forecast with the dashed line there shows that $1.3 billion deficit in the orange. And then on top of that is the basic education obligations, which are the McCleary issue. And then there will need to be some policy enhancements as well. So that was just trying to keep us all realistic, and I thought it would be helpful for you to see what the current status of the state budget is as well, because we are rather dependent upon general fund to support many activities that Washingtonians support, as well as public safety, as Officer or Deputy Sensi mentioned earlier, our commercial and our tribal treaty obligations. So as a result of the projected general fund shortfall, OFM has directed state agencies to manage budgets without increased state general funding. I know, perfect timing, right? But we certainly have needs. Luckily, they're quite a bit shy of what the projected shortfall is on K-12 spending, but it's still going to be an intense session to be able to secure any new additional general fund. So state agencies have been directed to start looking for ways to save and to look at your priorities and to develop those highest priorities first, and to think brutally about performance and outcomes. I think that's the first time I've seen that word brutally used in budget instructions to agencies, and to spend your time on the most critical things. And I think in general, we're doing that.
So I'll just jump in right here really quickly to emphasize that, we've been having budget challenges for years now. And since the recession, we've been in a continual state of looking for ways to be more efficient with what we have. This is really here to say we haven't just been sitting around waiting for money to fall from the sky to help ourselves. We are you've got an agency full of people committed and proud of the services they're delivering, and they do everything they can, even when we're seeing budget shortfalls, to keep those things going. It's a culture of really maintaining what we have. That you hear that when folks talk about keeping our hatcheries open with baling wire and duct tape. In your packets materials, you've got a summary of some of the actions that are in these categories that we've been doing over the years to really keep the doors open with limited new resources. So I think that's part of the story people need to hear along the way, is that we are really doing things to help ourselves. I'll just highlight a couple of those examples, because while some services have been cut, we've been able to do some really cool things with our efficiencies. Some realignment with our under the staffing and program functions, some realignments have allowed us to improve our hunter education. And here are some measurable results here. Moving into partnership and innovations, by focusing a little bit more on advancing citizen science, you can see here examples of where we've been able to engage volunteers and have them help bolster and grow the science that we need to achieve some of our work.
I think I covered most of the material on this slide already. I just wanted to reiterate that, again, is not only have we looked for efficiencies, but we've looked for budget solutions as well. We identified the shortfall. We introduced an agency request fee bill 2 years ago. We worked with the legislature to secure funding to maintain salmon fishing opportunities this biennium. And we've used federal carry forward level and one-time dedicated account fund balances wherever we can to preserve the fund balance in the state wildlife account so that we reduce the amount that we need to go after in fees.
So this graphic is really meant to be illustrative. Probably doesn't show up very well here, but in your packets, maybe a little bit better. I know it's very busy. It's though not intended to be all-encompassing. It's not intended to be threatening, but it is. I think it demonstrates the range of risks we're dealing with. The figures along the right side are biennial estimates. They're basically funding target totals that include both general fund and fees. So they're just rolled up numbers. But what we're trying to convey here is that in a no action alternative, or a zero funding scenario, we are in a situation where we will have to cut services. And that's what's depicted in the red down there. Again, not all-encompassing. These are all things that you've seen before in some of our budget-cutting exercises we've done in the past biennium. But this is becoming a pretty serious reality for us. If we split the difference between zero and the full amount of what we're proposing to request, it basically keeps us at status quo, maintains our current set of services. If we are able to gain full funding, we will be able to avoid those services, maintain, and continue to grow our programs. So now we'll move into proposals and would remind you again, these are the beginning of the conversation. I would recall that these and have you recall these proposals are guided, again, by what we heard in our listening sessions last year, as well as some other principles like reducing barriers to participation for youth, senior, and disabled, as well as keeping prices modest for some of our base fees. So our goal here, well, I just say we've grouped our proposals into four categories that you see here. Our task is to turn in these proposals to the governor's office by September 16th. We have two types of requests that get submitted, a legislative and a budget. As you can see, some of them are linked in many of these cases. And again, this only reflects the operational side. Mr. Burns will address the capital side in the next budget item. And now I'm going to hand it over to Raquel and Owen.
Hello, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. I'm Raquel, your legislative liaison. And Owen and I are going to kind of tag team these next slides because there's some legislative tweaks we're making, but also some budget requests that goes along with those. So as Jennifer mentioned, the Wild Future package is being split into four components. We've got a recreational revenue package, a commercial revenue package. We've also got an HPA revenue and streamlining piece of legislation we're working on, as well as a recreational immunity statute we're looking at putting forward in order to open up access to hunting and fishing on private lands. So the first one I'm going to talk about is the recreational revenue package. And we'll talk about the hunting fee proposals first. And just a reminder, these are still very drafty, and we are going out to the public this weekend next to let them take a look at these and respond to them, and we're getting some really good feedback. I'm going to all of those. I know Jim and Joe are going to some, and Jennifer and Owen as well, so we're learning a lot. What we're proposing is a 10% increase across all hunting fee types. We're looking at also increasing some of the harvest reporting requirements on tags and doing a $20 coupon for hunter education graduates in order to help with recruitment. We're also looking at providing a standalone damage license for deer, bear, and elk. Another thing we're looking at, we did some polling back early in the summer of some of our licensees to see if they prefer doing small incremental fee increases over time or these huge fee increases every 6 to 8 years. And we heard loud and clear that they'd prefer to be taking this stepwise. And so we're trying to get an inflationary clause in statute that would allow us to cover just the basic costs, fish food increases, other mandated increases that come from the legislature, like the case that Owen mentioned earlier where we had the salary increases that were mandated. So we're looking at doing that. And so the hunting revenue would bring in around $3 million.
And we've got a pie chart there depicting, yeah.
Do you want me to wait till the end?
Yeah. What's your pleasure?
Whatever you guys prefer. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, it was just the standalone damage. This would be like buying a second tag. In Idaho, you can buy a second tag. And so what would this standalone damage license tag is where you would buy that if you wanted to go in a damage situation.
Yeah, I believe so. And I think they're putting it at $20 also. So, and we can double back with you and get someone from the wildlife program and licensing to help us narrow in on that. Oh, Peter Verney's here to save the day.
It's a standalone tag, so you don't need to have a deer tag. You don't have to buy the tag. We're going to sell the damage tag when the conflict person tells us, hey, we've got a conflict. We'll sell you only a damage tag for $20. You can go out and shoot that deer that's causing that problem. So you don't have to have a general season license.
Okay, but if you were to want to save your general tag, could you buy this second one?
Yes, you could still buy your general season tag.
Okay, because in my world, most everybody always already have them.
Yeah, and so then if the conflict manager decides that they've got some animals they need to remove, he will set the limits for how many tags that they want to offer, and then they'll be able to purchase it as a single item, standalone. It won't affect your general season tag. You'll still have hunter reporting on that, and you'll still have those requirements. Separating them a little bit so, you know, there's less confusion around it, and it doesn't appear to the customer to be a general season tag that they're buying with the standalone tag.
Okay.
All right.
And I guess really quickly, while we're in that same vein, because I live right across the river from Idaho, residents can buy actually a second tag. It's an out-of-state at that rate, but you can have your regular. And I mean, there again, just some suggestions to generate some money if you're looking for that.
Yeah, they have a, I guess I'll introduce myself, Peter Verney. I'm the licensing divisional manager. Hi again, everyone. Yes, we've looked at some of that. They use a quota system there. It's a little bit different than what we're doing. We tried to marry up some stuff with them, but they're using that first come, first serve over the counter for game management units that are under bought, and they're selling the excess. We are doing something similar with our multi-season tags. When we have those left, we're doing a second first come, first draw for both our elk and deer. And that's testing out pretty well. We want to get a little more data on that before we look at trying to move away from that piece of it.
Thanks, Peter. Hey, Peter, do you want to hang out up here? Just in case. I'm going to have Peter hang out up here because there are some complex licensing components to this. In case you guys have questions, he's just right here close.
Okay, so we're trying to make this as simple as possible. So we put together some pie charts based upon kind of what we've heard from the public and what the new revenue, what the proposed new how the proposed new revenue would be used. So as I spoke to earlier, we've got a shortfall in the place where we deposit the fishing and hunting license revenue, and that's that blue piece of the pie there. And moving clockwise to the red pie, one of the biggest things we've heard from our hunters, and I'm sure you all hear it at every commission hearing, is the lack of or the need for increased access for our hunters. And so what we're proposing on working with landowners, some of the larger timber companies or smaller timber companies, to try to find ways that we can increase access for hunters. Part of that access, we hear on the flip side, is that additional enforcement would be is necessary to kind of maintain an orderly hunt. And also to, again, another theme that we continue to hear from our stakeholders is that they want more enforcement officers on the landscape to prevent poaching. Game species conservation is about where 10% of the revenue would go to. Another thing that we hear from our hunters is they want a hunting app for mobile devices. Almost everybody now has a smartphone or tablet that they're traveling with. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to pull up a game unit and determine what's legal to hunt and what the regulations are? And then another thing is that we hear about is an opportunity to shoot. And so there's a proposal for a Central Washington shooting range as well.
All right. So hard to understand how this might affect you without seeing it. So we've got a table here that'll help kind of demonstrate how this would affect each hunter based on their activities. On the left, you've got the hunter profile. In the middle, you've got the price increase. And on the right, we've got just a little bit of a cost equivalence. You can see what other activities are going at that cost these days. As you can see, for the guy who only hunts four deer or turkey, their cost would only increase $8. while the gal, who's a big game and small game hunter, would see an increase of $11, about the cost of a bottle of wine or a six-pack of beer. For the sportsman who hunts for everything, they'd be looking at a price increase of about $25. All right, and on the fishing side, we didn't go for the across-the-board 10% deal. A large percent of our deficit is on the fishing side, so we needed to, A, make up a bit more money. We also were... Oh, we've got a question here.
Everybody should be used to it by now. Back up one to the hunting one, would you please? And I have a question to you. When you raised your fees for like bear and mountain lion tags, did you see an incline or a decline or on license sales?
I may not have been here when that happened, so I don't. When did that occur?
A couple 3 years ago.
Yeah, before my time with the agency, so I don't know. I haven't looked into that. I can go back with some of my folks that were here.
I guess why I'm posing this question is I know personally I used to just go and buy it all, and then we started seeing a pretty good jump, and the chance of seeing a bear in my part of the world is fairly slim. A mountain lion is slimmer, and pretty quick you're just going, yeah, I don't need those. And to me, you get into the Walmart theory. I would rather, you know, because there again, on a mountain lion, the odds of seeing one is fairly slim, especially during hunting season. But I would just soon let one go a tag for $5 or $10 and sell them to a whole bunch more people. Then you get to a price point where pretty quick you're just going, eh, whatever.
That's why the big game package, the deer, elk, bear, cougar is so popular. Because really the cost is around the deer and the elk, and the bear, the cougar and the bear are very small costs, if zero, and the license piece of it. That's why it's our most popular. Back in 2011, when the last fee increase happened, we experienced in the middle of a recession a 4% drop in hunting participation during that year. I don't know if that was around bear or cougar, but that was the drop.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't check it because I don't buy an elk tag any longer. Trying to, the way the elk seasons are in our part of the world, I give up elk hunting about 10 years ago. But deer and turkey, that's just a given. Every year is going to get one. So.
Just posing the question.
Could I say something? I also looked at this slide and started thinking to myself, is this going to go over well with the public? Because a lot of these items are really urban type items. A $15 car wash, I don't know that everybody does that across the state. And the bottle of wine, I think our chair loves Merlot, but you know, I'm not sure that this is the...
Only in a box.
I looked at that and I thought, is this going to resonate or is this going to turn people off? And then the other thing that came to mind, just giving you feedback, is it's not just the one person hit. It's the family hit, the multiple, the kids and that, you know, we've been hearing about that would magnify the impacts and magnify the pain. So... this is going to be an uphill slog, no doubt about it. And
if I could just add, when we met, it was,
I don't know if I was the only one, but to put forth a comparison, what it is.
Yeah.
So I think those are just, I mean, that's not what, I mean, we just threw some things out. In fact, I actually used the one. I was in Hagen's, and I saw a pack of cigarettes was $11, you know, when I was looking, checking out, and I thought, so... What's in it? And I wouldn't use a pack of cigarettes, but you know, but I think some comparison is important because it puts it in perspective. And one thing that I don't know what it is to play around a golf, you know, or maybe it could be another recreational activity comparison or something. Which is, yeah. A ski lift for a, yeah.
Didn't realize I didn't have a mic. I haven't said anything this whole meeting. But to me, that's not what's important. What's important is, in 5 years, how many things have you gone to the grocery store anywhere to buy where the price hasn't gone up? How many people would like to have their same salary they had 5 years ago have no increases? You know, so the fact that these have to go up are to pay for very important programs. I think that's what we should be talking about. The importance of the programs that go away if we don't do this. Because without, you know, big increases from the legislature, we're left with very few choices. And, you know, granted, I'm a hunter, I'm a fisherman, and I buy tags and sometimes don't even use them because I do that to support the wildlife and fish in our state. And you know, we've got to get into that kind of a mentality of we're going to lose some serious stuff, and it's been 5 years since we've had an increase. And I know people aren't going to like it, but I'm afraid we're going to have to, you know, just it's the cost of doing business.
I think that's good advice across the board, and we aren't using this slide in our public meetings, just so you guys know, if that helps you sleep at night.
I also appreciate the feedback on the family piece. We probably aren't emphasizing what we are doing enough there in our proposals, but there are some shifts on both the hunting and fishing side that have family focus and incentives in changing, recognizing that hunter recruitment is a big issue, trying to make that more affordable for your older teenagers to keep participating, as well as things like allowing kids to account. You'll hear a little bit more about this, but allowing kids to account their catch on their parents' cards. So we will work on that, on emphasizing that.
All right, so back to fishing. Like I said, we're not doing the across the board. We do have about a 10 to 20% increase being proposed across most license types. We did want to try to have it reflected. The fisheries that are more costly to manage are going to be the ones that you'll see the licenses jump up the highest on, and that's with the introduction of individual catch record cards that you need to pay for, and those are going to be for salmon, sturgeon, halibut, and steelhead. The other thing we're doing is we're increasing the cost of the charter stamp, which would include a multi-species catch record card. We're adding a requirement that you need a license for smelt fishing, and we're revising the definitions of youth and senior so that the youth age is actually going to go for longer, so we can get more youth recruitment in, and then reducing the age for senior so we can keep the cost lower, keep people fishing longer. And again, we're doing an inflationary clause here, and the annual revenue we're hoping to bring in is around $12 million.
Again, another pie chart just to kind of look at some of the composition of what we're looking at here. I think most interestingly, on the fishing side, over 50% between the recreational license shortfall and the maintenance of current salmon fishing opportunities go just to maintaining current salmon opportunities. I think that's something notable to take away from that slide. I mean, the cost to manage our ESA permits, the increasing federal requirements for monitoring and sampling are becoming much more labor intensive. Again, hatchery maintenance has been something that we have really been falling behind on for a number of years, and that's part of the proposal as well. We've heard from people that habitat enhancements are an important thing as far as maintaining salmon runs and maybe weaning ourselves off of the hatchery system or less, you know, potentially even getting runs off of ESA listings. So there's some funding here that, for the regional fisheries enhancement groups, which are 14 nonprofits around the state that do a lot of good work around salmon habitat restoration. Currently, there's already a bit of a peel off of certain license types that support these folks. They also get quite a bit of federal funding as well. Again, we've heard from the public about the need for enhanced enforcement officers and resource protection, so that's a part of this proposal, as well as a sport fishing app for mobile devices. One of the things we've heard is to keep fishing regulations simpler and easier to understand. Again, with the use of modern technology, I think we can make that much easier for our
anglers. And then increased fishing and salmon opportunities, about 15%, basically reflecting a lot of what we've heard from the public, including the desire for increased hatchery production on the coast in Puget Sound, catch and release steelhead fishery on the Skagit River, and expansion of a sockeye fishery in Baker Lake up in Whatcom County, and generally just better, you know, one of the things we can do better, even better, is additional monitoring to maximize salmon fishing opportunity, to really get an idea of what the runs are looking like, and so that we're not causing any additional problems for wild fish.
So the other thing we considered was the need to keep prices competitive with our neighboring states. So we did, when we were setting prices, keep track of where Oregon's license fees were at. And you can see on this graphic here, we've got the current and proposed Washington fees, to the right of it, Oregon's current fees, and Idaho's on the far right. And you can see we're still below Oregon, even with the new catch record card and the proposed 10 to 20% fee increases.
We should probably state that Oregon does currently charge for catch record cards as well. And this proposal is very similar to Oregon's fee structure.
There again, I've been involved in the salmon restoration deal a lot of years, since 94 or something like that. Be a little careful trying to sell that on the east side, because they've kind of got to the point that they've thrown a lot of money at stuff you would really, really question when you're seeing it going on. It would sell really well on the west side, but no, we've seen some excesses on my part of the world that you would really question. And simple guys, simple thoughts. One thing that you brought up earlier was $6 million for fish food. And I guess as you're going, eh, probably money well spent, because there again, hatcheries are a big part of it. But that's something that most people wouldn't think about, that by the time you put the whole, that's a lot of money, but it's probably money well spent. But it's still, to the typical guy, would go, oh, okay. And you just don't put the whole accumulation together, just that one line item would be that much money in a year. So,
and we certainly look for opportunities to maximize our purchasing power there, purchasing in bulk and making relationships.
Well, I'm not questioning it, but I mean, to me, it's just, okay, yeah, you could probably see where to tally up to that much, but I mean, you just don't think about it.
Good point, Commissioner Holtzmiller. And, you know, we run this, Washington State has 83 hatcheries. I think we have more hatcheries than any other state or any country in the world. So we're rather unique in that respect.
Absolutely.
Japan has more hatcheries.
Do they?
All right. So then this is what it's going to look like for different types of fishermen here. For your trout fishermen, the fee increase is pretty small, around $4.50. The cost of a latte. I shouldn't even say it right. That's totally urban. From Starbucks. And what's that? For a salmon fisherman who wants a basic saltwater license with the catch record cards for both salmon and steelhead, they're looking at around $37. Which is about the cost to take your honey to the movies on the weekend. And for the combo package, which is what I usually go for, that's the grand salami on the bottom there, $79 is what they're looking at as a price increase.
You got to have a theater before you can even relate to this.
Yeah, right. Good point. All right, so we're moving into the commercial revenue package here. It's looking at bringing in $4.6 million annually by increasing fees across all commercial license types. The other thing we did was align the resident and non-resident commercial licenses to be consistent with interstate commerce laws. We're also proposing a new crew license, which we would have a 5-day temporary and also an annual license for crew members. That's similar to what they have in Alaska and Oregon currently. We're also proposing some streamlining to the commercial fish buying and dealing statutes that will make it easier for folks harvesting commercial seafood to bring it to market. This involves removing some redundant license types and creating a new consolidated license. We're also proposing to expand record-keeping requirements for imported species of concern. This will help us track illegally harvested and imported seafood to keep it out of the marketplace, things like Russian harvested red king crab.
I can talk a little bit about the commercial fee situation here. Currently, commercial fees are deposited into the state general fund. Certainly, we do receive some general fund in our appropriation from the legislature, but they do not come directly to the department. They're deposited into the big pot of money that's managed statewide. That's about $1.1 million a year that are currently collected on commercial licenses, not just salmon licenses. Under this proposal, new commercial fees, an additional $1 million, so that's almost a doubling of the amount currently collected. And then there's part of the proposal, and from 2 years ago when we ran the legislation with both recreational and commercial fee increases, we had some support from the commercial community on transferring this excise tax that they pay when they bring their fish to the wholesaler or to be processed. And that's a tax that's collected by the Department of Revenue that's also deposited into the general fund. We receive just one small piece of that to the wildlife account. That's the anadromous fish part of that part of that tax, but it amounts to about $5,000 a year. The excise tax brings in, and it fluctuates based upon salmon runs, about $2.5 million a year. So we estimate annual revenue under this proposal at $4.6 million. A little over half of that, again, is just to maintain current salmon opportunities in the face of increasing costs there. Hatchery maintenance is 10%, and I see we've got some loss of translation there. But I think I can do this from memory. That green slice is 8%. It is additional enforcement presence to manage the fisheries, and then 30% there for more intensive monitoring and sampling, especially on the lower Columbia and out on the coast, in order to maximize commercial fishing opportunity.
And we couldn't fit the table of all of those fees broken out on the slideshow, but they are in your packet. So just if you want to look those up, they're in there. So the other thing we're proposing to move forward, we heard in our listening sessions a lot about increasing fish protection and enforcement to make sure that our HPAs are being processed, but then also people are being compliant around that. So we are looking at, first of all, dealing with the HPA fee expiration, which is next year. It expires. And while we're in there in the statute, Jeff and his team has been working with a bunch of stakeholders to figure out what else we might want to do to keep stakeholders happy and increase fish protection. Some of the things they're mulling around are taking the fee structure from a flat fee to a project cost-based fee. That's to help us get more revenue from those permittees that are the permits that are taking more time to process. And then the other thing they're looking at is some improvements to customer service and technical support and strengthening permit compliance and project outcomes.
This program, up until a few years ago, was 100% supported by the general fund. There's been a big move to move onto a user fee-based model for many services provided by state government. And the additional revenue here, like Raquel mentioned, comes from a request for additional GFS because there is a general public benefit to having fish protection on construction projects around water. This hydraulic project approval program has our biologists going out, working with folks that are working on or around water to make sure that the construction activities that they're participating in aren't harming fish or occurring during periods that would be sensitive to fish, say, let's say there were the Chinook spawning period or something like that. I think, you know, it seeks to increase the effectiveness of the program, to improve customer support. Many times when we get out to a project, we can actually reduce the cost for a project proponent by spending some time with them on alternatives.
And it also seeks to kind of spread the increase across those who benefit. Again, there's a general fund piece of this component. There's new fees, and I should mention that it's very similar to what's being done in California for the last number of years. They also have a similar program to our HPA program, and they set permit fees based upon the cost of the project. So this is very similar there. And then there's a small, smaller lift on the wildlife state, recognizing that our anglers are already contributing to the program as it is now.
So the final piece of legislation we're proposing moving forward is going to get at that need we heard during our listening sessions to address this reduced access over the years on private timberlands, especially on the west side. And one of the tools that we're hoping to move forward next year is to allow private landowners to be eligible for this liability immunity under RCW 424.210. That's just one of many tools we're exploring to get that, get some progress on that front. It's hard to open that statute, we're aware, but there's, I think we can get some support behind it, and it'll really help as one tool in the toolbox for working with private timber landowners to open up some access for hunting and fishing.
Oops.
So real briefly on stakeholder outreach, we have conducted quite a bit of stakeholder outreach. Listed here are a number of the folks that we've met with since June, since these proposals have been somewhat ready for the public to begin to digest. At these early stages, we're seeing a range of reactions, as you would expect. And the support varies among stakeholders. The information we're getting right now indicates that while they're not totally happy with it, and this is really rolled up very high, while they're not totally happy with the price increase, there's probably more support right now. This is just today. If we take the temperature for today, there's probably more support in advancing the fishing fees. There's less. There's more opposition on the hunting fee side. And the wildlife groups are split. A lot of people are undecided. It's pretty early in the process. But we are seeing support in areas like I spoke to before for like allowing children to report catch on their parents' card. We're seeing support for a commercial crew license. We're even seeing support on increased technical assistance for habitat projects. The concerns, the majority of the concerns are ones that you all have probably heard already, the significant increase in the prices. We believe that is the, kind of a sticker shock effect. So we're hoping that as people start to see, I won't use lattes as an example, but something like that, they can start to process. The other big piece that we're seeing questions around and we'll continue to work to answer is how we ensure that the funding goes what it's collected for. So the outreach is, we won't stop. We won't ever stop. And being optimistic, I would expect that we will continue to get feedback. We will continue to shape these proposals until these new bills are signed into law.
The dates, or you have the dates, what time and where for the public workshops?
Most of them are 6 to 8, so they're evening, so folks can come after work, and we can send you the locations of each of them.
Okay, on to our operating budget requests proposed to the commission. So at the end of the biennium, we've got one more chance to make any adjustments that we need to kind of clean up the current biennium. And that's what's called a second supplemental. And by law, none of these packages carry forward. If this is a need in 17-19, then you'll see a corresponding package there as well. Number one is our Ellensburg offices, I should say, consolidation. In Region 3, we've got 5 facilities, 3 office space and 2 separate storage facilities. They're scattered throughout the Ellensburg area. And they have, we've got some significant declining building infrastructure there. And as a matter of fact, we had to move a few staff to Yakima this winter when we had an awning collapse over one of the entrances of the building. That's another example, I guess, of the agency striving to reduce and manage costs, but we may have gone a little bit too far that time. So what we're proposing to do is that $265,000 of what it would take to move our staff, our electronic infrastructure, and so forth. That's a one-time cost, and then we believe we can use the current amount budgeted for the lease rate in the new facility because we're actually going to reduce our square footprint, considering that many of our employees spend a good deal of their time out in the field. We're working with OFM and kind of new best practices to create touchdown stations or carrels for our employees so that they no longer have dedicated cubicles all the time. And in that manner, we're also working to control costs. Number two, a federal authority there. You know, we have about 4,000 contracts with the federal government and local governments, public utility districts, and so forth for environmental mitigation open at any one time. And so we track our federal and private local authority to make sure we don't run out of it. And it looks as if we're going to be running out of spending authority. So then rather than being disruptive to the agency and running out of authority, we're requesting some additional authority to make sure we've got enough to be able to conduct the work that we need to do contractually. Unfortunately, we have a legal services shortfall in the billing that we pay to the Attorney General's office. We've been working with OFM to adjust the central service model, and I don't think we're quite there yet. We're about $300,000 behind in the current biennium. We've met with the Attorney General's office. They concur that the shortfall exists, and we're looking to get some traction on that between the governor's office and the legislature. Wildfire costs, we always catch up on these in a supplemental. These are for suppression, which we pay to DNR and to local fire districts, as well as restoration work. And luckily, as of yet, I spoke with Paul Damer and Clay Sprague the other day. We haven't had any major damaging fires on any of our wildlife areas, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed there. However, there are fires that are burning in the state. So. More to come on that. And then emerging wildlife diseases. Basically, unfortunately, as I'm sure you've all heard, we had an occurrence of white nose syndrome in the state much earlier than we would have expected to see it. This is a disease that affects bats, especially when they're hibernating in colonies. It has devastated bat populations on the East Coast. Its first introduction was about 10 years ago. Some of those species have actually been listed under the Endangered Species Act. So we're working. We need some additional capacity to work with other states, to work with our federal partners, to try to get an idea of the spread of this disease and try to limit its spread to other western states and throughout Washington State. Another unfortunate emerging disease is actually also tied to an aquatic invasive species issue, and that's the African clawed frog. We've got a couple of populations of them, one in Lacey and another one in King County. These are voracious predators. They eat everything in sight. Alan Ployce, one of our the director of our aquatic invasive species program, actually set up a trap and caught over 300 of these frogs. They're rather ugly in one evening. And that's my perspective, obviously. And unfortunately, they also carry a disease that's known to affect fish populations. They're about the size of a baseball or something like that.
Wow.
Not quite that big? Well, maybe that's just when they're blown up in the jar full of alcohol anyway. That's the only one that I've seen so far, thank goodness. Unfortunately, they do carry a disease that can be very harmful to fish. It's called the rhinovirus, and we certainly wouldn't want to see that impact our fish populations, especially ESA-listed salmon populations. So we're looking for some capacity there, and we're working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as closely as we can to try to mitigate those issues.
I'm not quite clear why the Ellensburg office consolidation is in the supplemental. Is it already ongoing besides moving the guys down to Yakima for safety? Or
It's a really good question. Basically, after the collapse of the awning this winter, and there were also some other circumstances with our facilities manager where she felt that it was high time to move forward with this. Generally, this is something we would move forward with in a second supplemental, like the Southwest Regional Office relocation, which we finally got funded last session. It's just kind of an emergent issue, and we've got an opportunity, and we've been working with OFM facilities to facilitate the move. It's not a done deal yet, but it's an opportunity we'd like to move forward with.
Okay, thank you.
Lease rate adjustments, that's just something you see every couple of years. All state agencies need to renegotiate leases. Built-in assessments, this is probably worth spending a little bit of time on. This is part of the Wild Future Initiative. This is something that we continually hear from counties. Our payments in lieu of taxes are a state obligation that we currently pay to 13 counties that elect to receive PILT. You can either receive PILT or you can receive fines, fees, and forfeitures from violations under Title 77. The legislature has capped those payments at 2009 levels for the last three biennia, and we've been working each biennia to try to get that funding reinstated, and we're working with a coalition right now to try to get that funding reinstated, recognizing its general fund is going to be difficult to secure this session, but it certainly makes relationships with the counties better. It's a benefit to the counties, and it certainly doesn't stand in our way when there are properties to purchase to protect habitat. Illegal services shortfall, if the central service model is not fixed in 17-19, we would continue to have a shortfall there. And then wildfire costs. The beginning of the biennium, we just like DNR, we basically set a baseline or try to set a baseline based upon the last 10-year experience with costs. Our current base is about $350,000 a fiscal year due to the very horrible fire seasons over the past couple of years. We've seen increased costs as has DNR and many communities around the state, and so we're looking to get a little bit of a lift there, recognizing that our fire costs will probably be quite a bit higher than that in 17-19. And then IT security, the office of the state, there's a state office of IT that basically promulgates policy that all state agencies need to follow. Our IT division did an evaluation of where we're at, and we're currently out of compliance with state policy, so we're looking to purchase some services from WATEC to be able to mitigate any impacts to our information technology. You may have heard that our website actually was hacked a few weeks ago. That was rather disruptive. It was down for several days. We need to be in a better place there. And then on to our performance level proposals. I should have mentioned those former proposals were just the maintenance of current service levels, and our performance level proposals are proposals for new work. Obviously, Wild Future is a big piece of that, but public records and open data. We spend an enormous amount of time responding to public records requests throughout the agency. I was speaking to one of our division managers who had about six or seven that he was responding to on his whiteboard that week, taking up an enormous amount of our time. And one of the solutions that other state agencies are using is an electronic content management system, hoping to get some traction there on an investment to be able to respond to public records in a more effective manner, to remain transparent, but also to be able to continue to maintain the core work that our staff does, rather than continually spending an inordinate amount of time than they should otherwise. I-1401, Deputy Chief Sensi mentioned this, this was mentioned in the enforcement program's presentation, so I won't spend too much time on it. It was an initiative that passed that created a bunch of new responsibilities for our enforcement program. We thought we had some funding secured last biennium, and it fell through in the final budget negotiations. These new responsibilities for our enforcement program are especially troubling when we don't get funding, since we're basically down 25% the number of officers we had in 1994. We employ 123 officers currently, and we had 163 officers in 1994. That paired with the increasing population pressure across the state, we've got a much less per capita, per enforcement officer level of oversight. And then aquatic invasive species has been covered by Raquel, but again, it's the legislature provided $300,000 a couple of years ago to help convene a work group to talk about what are the best ways to fund a program to mitigate the threat from aquatic invasive species. The Pacific Northwest is the last area in the United States that does not have an infestation of zebra or quagga mussels. Other states are spending millions and billions of dollars trying to get rid of those. Washington State has got one of the lowest budgets for this activity out of the 12 states that do have aquatic invasive species programs. Obviously, with the Puget Sound, our coastline, the Columbia River, and all of our lakes, we'd like to do a better job reducing the threat from these species. The proposed budget there is $1 million. That would be a peel off of the public utility tax, which is currently deposited in the general fund, user fees on commercial vessels and seaplanes, and then some shipping industry fees on $100 per year based on vessels over 300 gross tons. And I believe, and I know that California and Oregon both have fees in place for the shipping industry, considering that they can be a vector through the use of ballast water to transport aquatic invasives around the seas.
Again, I would just follow up based on some of the feedback you heard at public input this morning on this particular proposal. Again, this was something we were directed by the legislature. The stakeholders work with the legislature last time around. So we were directed. We convened a group of stakeholders that put forward recommendations on how to bridge this funding gap. Those recommendations became public out of that group, an external group, in June. So those have been floating around. And in working with the governor's office on how we package this, the instructions were pretty much, let's finish your homework here and let's get this bill moving. We expect that now that we have the legislation out there, people will be able to give us feedback, that the stakeholders will be able to help move this one along.
Okay, that's all I have from a budget perspective.
So here's a quick look at timelines, what we're looking at ahead of us here. Again, you've heard that we've got a due date of September 16th to get these proposals in. I would just remind you that even last week when we met with the director of OFM, they acknowledged that whatever we'd be submitting would be a placeholder. They know how this works and that we would be continuing to develop these proposals starting in June when it hit the public, all the way until that bill is signed. So that's what we're looking for right now. And here we are looking to the commission to approve our recommendation that we that you allow us to continue this work to move to develop a placeholder proposal that we submit to the governor's office that's reflective of these revenue goals.
Thank you. Looking at the time, and also we still have items to do. Any questions from the commission? Okay, hearing none, then we'll go to take action decision on item number 11 first. Do it together? Okay.
Legislation and budget.
Okay. Okay, yeah, we'll do it together then. Set. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Given that public meetings are still underway, the Commission moves to allow the Department to submit the 2017 legislative and operating budget packages to OFM as a placeholder, recognizing that the packages will continue to evolve over the course of the next several months in response to ongoing stakeholder conversations.
Motion's been made. Second?
Second.
Commissioner Thornburg seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you.